All right, here we go. This is 1093.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Big O! Showtime!
I like sweet on me.
Nothing wrong with getting a little dirty.
Yeah, I gotta put on my good sweatpants.
Are you making it pretty young in the kitchen?
You don't meet.
Sushi.
It's the Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. There ain't no fuddy-duddies that are like it bad. For the show, then go to recordlnts.org. And the IC channel is linuxtech.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1093 of the Link's Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Joel.
Evening.
There he is.
And we have Dave.
Hello.
Yeah. And we got the bad news. Not bad news. I mean, it's... So, we knew this was coming, but it is now here. And I think it needs to be done by the end of the month. A what? No. We are moving away from Okta and going to Entra, which is Microsoft's single sign-on solution, or one of them.
Azure, yes.
Yeah, so, and so, you know, our team doesn't manage any of that, but it's going to be a little interesting because we have basically two applications that we need to update. That one is our, you know, the story editor, which is WordPress, and the other one is our authentication service, which is JavaScript based, and it uses Passport library, which thankfully is, you know, something that's been kept up to date. But we haven't gotten like any of the specifics yet on what it is that we need, how we would integrate with this, and whether we need to get all new certificates, whatever. But it's like a month away. And the thing that kind of distressed me is on the WordPress side, we were originally told to use one login, which has a WordPress plugin, and so it took a while to figure out how to get that damn thing configured, largely because one login is its own SSL or single SSO service. So their plugin does work with different things. I think they use the PHP SAML library or whatever that is, and they support a bunch of other services, but their documentation was hard to find. And this is like 3 years ago. So I went looking for their documentation again today, and come to find out, when I went over to the Circle of Discovery, which is start here, go there, go end up at this thing, and then wind up back where you started again, and then, you know, wash and repeat with this damn product. I think it's called PHP SAML, or it could be WordPress SAML. I forget which one it is, but I went to that library, and it was pretty far out of date, like 2019 out of date. So I hadn't been updated in like a long time. And I was just seeing if I could find their documentation. So I go click on the wiki, which is on the GitHub. Like, the only thing they have is a GitHub page. So I thought maybe they have something on their wiki, and you click on their wiki, and apparently there is no documentation, but there is a curl command on there to curl the evil.com website into bash, which I think is a horrible idea if you were going to attempt to do that, because I don't know what it would do to your system. But somebody I don't know if it was the owner of the repository or what, decided that would be a funny ha-ha thing to do. But in their problem section, there was a question in there as to whether the project was still active because it'd been so old. And apparently, the people at One Login were going to fork it. The developers at One Login were going to fork it because they rely on it and it hadn't been used. So they were in the process of forking all those different libraries, the Java one, the Python, the PHP, all those different ones, so that they can continue to go on their product. And then as I'm reading through this thread, somebody then says, so it takes you to the Java one. So I read the Java one and they're talking about doing this. And like back in like 2023 or something, the people are like, what's going on? It's been like 2 years now. Have you finished forking it? And then somebody's like, One Login doesn't have engineers anymore. They were bought up by a private equity firm and now they just rely on outsourcing. And I'm like, oh god, this is terrible. Like, should we be using this? What can we use now? You know, it's really confusing. So that's up in the air. And it's like, well, if we can get it to work with Entra, should we keep using it, even though, like, you know, it's really questionable? And the thing that it looks like people recommended in the past to use was the open source part of that, and that's not being developed anymore. I don't know who, nobody owns it. It's just a mess. So that's going to be a fun project that we have to kind of get done in the span of a month. I will have a couple of days of vacation. The other guy I work closely with, who does a lot of this stuff, is going to Greece at the end of the month. So, you know, this is going to be a joy of trying to scramble to get this done. But so we're going to have to do it on JavaScript side, too, for our Node applications. But I got, you know, I finally was able to get a JavaScript project that not only would like help me hone my skills, but wasn't too far above my pay grade for understanding of JavaScript. And it was converting our current generation one functions. And this is cloud, Google Cloud Computing functions. So there's generation one, generation two. So they're kind of trying to phase out generation one, I guess. And so they're making it more challenging to find them on their console. It used to have its own section, and then they bundled it in with Cloud Run, and now they have moved it off to another section off of Cloud Run where you have to click this button to go look at your generation one function. So I think they would really like us to move to generation two functions. So it's changing those over. There's some slight differences, but our standards had changed a bit for generation two for our current standards for functions. So it allows me to not only migrate them from generation one to generation two, but bring them up to the standards of how we're currently developing functions and have a better understanding for how it all comes together. It's still kind of a pain in the butt because JavaScript is asynchronous. No, not asynchronous. It runs in parallel. So if you were to, for an example, if you were to just try and run something through a loop, chances are, if you don't do it the right way, JavaScript runs through the whole thing. So it'll fire off that loop, and while that loop's going, it'll just continue on with the rest of the application. That's not necessarily what you wanted to do, so there's things that you have to do to make it asynchronous and operate that way. So that's been a little one of the bigger hurdles for me with understanding that. But anyway, it's been a fun thing. I think I spoke about this last week, maybe. Probably the most challenging thing was the testing aspect of it. So unit testing and integration testing, and the way that you're technically supposed to do all this is if it's going to make a call out or do certain things that go beyond the application itself, you need to mock those. So like if you hit an API to retrieve some data, instead of it actually going out to the API and retrieving that data, you need to mock that call. So you capture the call that's going to be made, and then you mock it and return the data that you expect it to return. And then you want to then, once you get the end result through the application, you compare it to what you expect that result should be. So, you know, if you were, it's just like if it was like an arithmetic program, right? you would send a call out to the calculator, the arithmetic program, but instead of it actually making the call out to it, it would capture that and then return a value. So if you were to say, you know, what's 5 + 5, right? And that would go through your application. The value that should be returned back is 10. And once it goes through your application, you would compare the result that your application returns to you with the result that you expect it to be. And that's the way it's supposed to work. And I always found testing challenging because when I read the documentation, it's like you get the hello world version of the test. And then when you go to look at how it's being applied, it's like you've gone from hello world to now we're writing binary machine language code. You know, it's like, how do we get here? You know, I don't see the connection. But it's the more you do it, the more you learn, the more comfortable you get with it. And it's always a challenge, right, Joel? They got him. They got him, Dave.
Sure. No, I said sure.
Yeah. But no.
I'm talking. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. We can hear you now. So here we are.
Okay.
Here you are.
You gotta wait for me to press the fucking button, man.
The fucking button. Is that what, and then Dave, wait, Dave's hips start going.
But
guess who I talked to today?
Yeah.
I don't know.
He joined the dark side, he said.
Yeah.
He didn't say that. He didn't say that. He said something completely inappropriate.
What, you mean?
Of course.
I bought a Mac.
No,
Chad Wallenberg.
You're close. No, it wasn't Chad, but you're close. You're kind of close. You hear him almost every week, but only his voice.
Joe? I don't know.
He's not on the show, but you hear him on the show every week.
Eggwell.
Yeah, Peggy.
Oh,
Peggy. He said he had to buy an iPhone.
What?
You hear it?
Yeah, he said
he's
because
too young for an iPhone.
He said he had to buy an iPhone because his eyesight. The iPhone is a lot
better for
his ability to read it.
Lots of blind people I know actually that's what they use.
That's legit.
His words were exactly, I got it because it's easier on my eyes than the newest Pixel phones.
Excellent.
Okay, I get it. Yep. I have a MacBook only because I new MacBook Air only because I wanted to run Creative Cloud. If Adobe would ever get off their ass and make a Linux port, I don't have to do that. But, you know, hey, that's not going to happen. And yeah, I've tried Lightroom. Dark Table.
Here
and
comes
the other
the excuses,
stuff.
Right, Dave?
Yeah,
they are excuses.
What do you use Creative Cloud for?
Mainly Lightroom And I don't even mean the new Lightroom, because they got, because here's a fucking stupid thing. They got two versions of Lightroom.
So this is all about photo editing? Is that, that's what you need
it
for?
Not just that. No, I use Premiere and I use After Effects as well. Although those two to a lesser extent now. I don't make as many videos as I used to.
I'm assuming you tried other
open
things. You're just not invested the time to change your workflow.
No. I got tired of OpenShot fucking crashing and me losing half a project, me being up all night versus a couple hours when there was this yearly video that I would make where I'd basically be taking pictures and video throughout the day. And then at night when we got back to the cabin, I would be assembling a video to show at the church in the morning. Well, when I was using OpenShot and open source tools, I would be up all fucking night. You know, I'd be up all night. And with the automation, like, I can select, like, say I got a series of, I mean, I'm not saying you can't do this in Darktable, because I'm sure you can, but there's reasons I like Lightroom versus Darktable, because the main reason is I don't have to, if I want to go buy a new camera, I don't have to say, well, is it going to work with Darktable? You know, if I buy any camera I buy, it's going to work in Lightroom, all right? That's not the case in Darktable, because if I buy a new one and they change the format of the RAW format, then I have issues with it, all right? I don't like it. You know, I don't want to do that necessarily, but that's the truth. So, but I went with the 13-inch MacBook Air, and it's like just a slightly larger netbook. I absolutely love the format of this thing. It's so thin too,
but
and light.
You're gonna do video editing and photo editing on a 13-inch laptop?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. I did it on the 13-inch Surface Pro for a while. That I still have.
So you can live with that. You just can't live with open source software.
No.
I'm joking.
It's just a fact. I want to use.
Shut up, Dave.
The industry tool. Hey. At least I'm not gonna switch to something like Final Cut, because I can't afford a Final Cut. Final Cut doesn't have a subscription, and it's also pretty crappy too. Because they went prosumer with Final Cut. And they went from making it a good pro tool to a prosumer tool, which took a lot of things out of it. Almost like I used to use iMovie quite a bit, and iMovie was a very manual thing, but nowadays it's not. Now, I have iMovie on it, too. I haven't played around with it yet, but I might. But I do need to make some videos for my first form stuff. But mostly I'm doing those straight up on my phone. I'm just recording it and posting it, not doing a lot of editing. But although I might experiment. One thing I'm not sure of is how can I record a video on my phone and then record a voiceover for the video. I think I got an idea on how to do it. I might have to do I pay for PowerDirector on Android. It's by the same folks that did the DVD software on Windows. I forget who that company is, but PowerDirector will let you edit videos on Android phones, and it works pretty well. I've made several videos on it. So, and when I was at my next to last trip when I was in professional services, I did I took my drone and stuff with me and flew some in San Diego, and I actually used my phone to edit all the videos that I was posting at the time. So I think I posted those to YouTube, but so I've experimented, and I'm in open of all the tools that I tried video editing wise, OpenShot's probably the better one. But it's just unstable. My last experience, and every once in a while I'll fire it up and try it. Get the latest version and try it, and I'm still not satisfied with it. So, some of it is the workflows can be different that Adobe uses versus the others. But a lot of editing software kind of mimics like the Adobe tool from like 10 years ago. You know, that's what the GIMP feels like to me. You know, with Adobe's also been adding things like AI tools to let you do things like remove backgrounds and stuff like that, so you don't have to futz around doing all the selections and stuff like that. And it's just got a lot more automation to it, which helps me when it, like when if I go, like if I have a real like next this Sunday actually is probably going to be a busy Sunday for me. And first off, I'll be shooting pictures in church, which will be unusual because I haven't been doing it. I used to be doing it every week, but I don't do that every week anymore. But we're baptizing people Sunday, so I'll be taking pictures for of the baptisms, and I'll have probably two or three cameras set up, my two pocket cams, as well as my Sony cam. So, but it's just I needed to be stable. I needed to be able to understand the raw formats of the cameras I use, which are DJI as well as a Sony E-mount. I still have my Nikon SLR, which is a D3300. I don't use it much anymore. In fact, I'm wondering if the batteries are any good anymore. I haven't used it in years. So I probably should sell it.
That's an SLR or a digital SLR?
Digital SLR.
Okay.
Yeah. My Sony's technically what they call it, mirrorless. So I don't know if it's they call it Micro Four Thirds or I don't know. I went with the Sony when I upgrade cameras because I liked it was smaller. You know, I can probably fit it in my backpack.
The only camera I own is it won the photography magazine 1979 Camera of the Year. It's a Minolta X700.
Yeah. There's a very old school camera that I'd love to get. If it didn't cost a freaking arm and a leg to buy the film, that's one of the Polaroid SX70s. That's the Polaroid they had that folded. My grandpa had one. But that one took the Time Zero film. And there are things that you can do with a picture while it's developing to basically make art. But the film itself is starting, you know, it's not like they make it much anymore, I don't think. So it's one of those things like you would love to have that old computer you always own. Like if you found a Next Cube, you probably love to have that, right? Especially if they didn't want like $10,000 for them, which they're actually almost backed up to the same price they were when they were new, when you can find one. You know, but it's like, but after you get it, it's like, what are you gonna do with it?
Okay, and I got a question, and this is just, I'm not looking for an in-depth answer. It's just, the answer is gonna be what it is. I mean, it may be in depth. I don't know. You take digital photography. Yes. How much time do you spend editing your photos? What's the process like?
A very good question. Depending on the amount, of course, I would say hour shooting and an hour editing.
Okay.
I don't do a lot of heavy editing.
Okay. Because I got a buddy that's into photography, and he and I, you know, years ago when I had this Minolta X700, this is back in the 80s, we both took a lot of pictures, and, you know, it was SLR. It wasn't digital. And you would bracket your photos. You'd change your f-stop.
Yep.
You'd take six photos. You might get one good one. And that was it. I mean, you could change the film, and, you know, you could do things with, you know, but that was it. And you took a lot of pictures, and you got some good ones. He's all digital now, of course, just like you are. And he spends probably, you know, probably what you're doing, an hour editing for every hour of film, I mean, of picture taking. But it seems like it's much more than that. To me, that's like a step backwards. I mean, maybe I'm just old school. It just seems like a lot of work.
It depends. I mean, I try – one of the things that when I shoot, I try to shoot the best picture that I can shoot in the camera. So,
and maybe that's what he's not doing. He spends so much time editing his – probably way more than you. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's all dependent on, you know, what you're what your desire is, what your use case is. You know, me, if you ever watched Scrubs, the episode with Brandon Fraser on it, where he's walking around with a Polaroid, you know, and he's said had a line in there where he says he didn't like post pictures because they're not real, and I'm the same way. I want to catch, like at church, one of the things that I want to catch when I can is when people are emotionally connected to what's happening, you know. Some of the best pictures I took when I started doing this kind of a ministry at church was when I was at the retreat. I'd catch pictures of guys just pouring themselves out on their knees at the men's retreat. And some of those were just the best pictures that just captured the moment. When everyone lines up and says cheese, I don't like that. It's not real. You know,
Everybody's different.
There are times that you want that though.
Yeah.
So
I never like taking pictures of people. That was just, I'm weird that way. But I got a first cousin that's a professional photographer.
Yeah.
And my buddy that I was talking about, he just sucks at editing. I mean, he spends all this time, and his photos were way better back when he was taking regular film.
Yeah. See, and then you also have those that will. They'll shoot it and they'll want to re-sky the picture. Like if it's cloudy out, they re-sky the picture. It's like,
it's way too much.
Yeah, I never do that.
All his photos look like they're just HDR to the max. And I basically the corners are messed up. It's just ugly.
I white balance them and I make sure that like the highlights and the shadows aren't completely blown out. And that's about all I do. You know, now it depends. Sometimes I do more. You know, but the nice thing with Lightroom is like once you say you have several that you shot same f-stop, same aperture, and they're all similar in color format and stuff like that. Once you get one, select the rest of them, press a button, and they're all edited, and they're usually pretty damn close. So I mean,
you can do it from the command line with Image Magic.
Oh Jesus Christ! Yeah, but you can't see it until it's done.
I know, but that's wild that there's a tool to do that. And the last video I edited, the last video I ever created was probably 3 years ago, and I used it's a special use case. I was making a pre-roll for my Plex server. So before a movie would play, it would play this pre-roll. And I took two programs. One is this Matrix program. That you know, it scrolls the letters, and when it's done, it's customizable text, you know, in the center of the screen that the matrix is forming that. But before that, I ran it's the movie War Games, you know, when they're hacking into the computer. I forget the name. There's a command line program that simulates that. So I ran those two commands side by side and recorded it with the retro console. I don't know if you've ever used that. It's a terminal emulator for Linux that looks extremely retro. You can make it like CRT, and you can have amber or green, whatever. I recorded that with a screen recorder, and I think I used Image Magic and put some sound some machine sounding background noise.
Interesting.
I did all that from the command line, but
I did that like After Effects, there was a way you can basically have it type the what you want on the screen, or it looks like that. Now, granted, I'd have to add sound after that, but once I get that clip, adding the sound usually is not too bad. But we did a series where we had people, I would record them on video, sharing their story, you know, and the song we used was "This Is My Story," right? And I did that because we were using like typefaces and stuff in the art for the series and stuff like that. So that I thought that was appropriate, and it worked out. And it was one of the most well received sets of work that I did. So. The whole thing is the whole reason I went that direction is one, I actually took a lot of classes on it for one. So I've been kind of trained on some of that, So, especially the Lightroom, I took the photography. I think everything except for the HDR series, because at the time I was taking it with a point-and-shoot camera, which didn't have the ability to bracket the photos and stuff like that, which you really need to do HDR processing. Now it's funny, you can just do it on camera, you know, or on your phone, you know. It's pretty good when I've taken that. But one thing I did notice is the I was looking at there's a thing I use to basically buy stuff on payments through my work. And I went in there to look in there and see, because I'm thinking about, like, probably come August maybe get a new drone. But they had no drones on their website. It makes me wonder, because there was a bill in Congress that they were trying to outlaw CCP drones, you know, ones that are made in communist China. So, because they're afraid of they'd be vulnerable, you know, be a danger to the United States. So I don't think that bill's – I think it's dead now, though. But I know because of that, a lot – and this is even before Trump got in the office. It wasn't a Trump thing. It was actually Biden's the House and Senate when Biden was in office. So it never got out too far. So – but – there's a lot of people that have an invalid fear of the DJI drones, but that's okay. I don't, you know, I can survive a little while longer with the one I got. I don't have my smallest one, which is also my newest one, is the DJI Mini 3, not the Mini 3 Pro. So there's some things that it can't do that the Pro can do. So. But for what I use it for, generally, I don't need those things. I don't think my Mini can. I have my original Mavic Pro. I could, like, draw a box around me and walk, and it would literally follow me.
Yeah.
I don't think my Mini can do that. So, but I don't care. Most of what I take, like, what I'll do is Easter Sunday, we'll be doing an Easter egg hunt outside. And one of the things I'll do is I'll line up a shot off to the side, because they'll line up kids all on one side and go one, two, three, go, or something like that, and then they'll all take off. So I'll set that up, recording a video and capture when they all take off. But anywho, but I also was looking for a real small machine too, and that Mac Mini fit the bill. I might have looked at
Oh man, it must be so exciting you're falling asleep already with it.
No, it's been a long day. It's been a long day. I could have looked at a newer Surface, because at least the newer Surfaces have the ability to plug in external graphics cards and stuff like that. But I decided against that, because first off, I'm probably not going to buy the external graphics card because, you're talking like another computer to do that, you know, because the enclosure is going to be $300 or $400, I think, and then the graphics card inside will be another $300 or $400. So it's
the enclosure's what does the enclosure give you?
The ability to plug it in. It's a PCI card into it, and then plug it in with a Thunderbolt port
for $300. Damn,
I might be exaggerating. Let me Google that.
Jeez, and then you got to buy the
graphics card to put in it. Right,
that's you might as well just buy a whole new PC.
So at like that point. This, yeah. So. There is a Mini C.
We could use a trackball mouse with it, then.
Okay, Mini like Dave Forum. Does. Okay, the cheapest now there's probably going to be some issues with this one, mostly because it doesn't look very big, and a lot of graphics cards are fucking huge. The Mini Forum DEG1 external GPU dock station for it'll fit the RTX 4090 in it. So that'd be interesting.
Wait, how much is it?
That one is only $109. So
the enclosure.
Or yes.
The car. Okay.
The enclosure, and then it's another. It could be depending on what card you get. Like if you want a 50 series, forget it. You're talking about $500-$600.
And then this connects to an external monitor, I guess, right?
Or you just connect it to the Thunderbolt port, and then your computer can use it to accelerate, like programs like Creative Cloud, stuff like that, or like Premiere and stuff like that. So it greatly will speed up the rendering times on things. So, or you can mine Bitcoin with it, although it's hardly worth mining Bitcoin anymore. But yeah, it is what it is. You know, the thing is right now.
One second. I gotta step away for a minute. I'll be back.
Sure.
So you keep going.
Yep. The open source world, software wise. I mean, there is some. Always will be some. Development in the desktop world, but my feeling is that it's not gone. It's not like it was when we, you know, like when we first started the show. You know, it's like when we first started the show. I know there was advancement after advancement for the coming to the Linux desktop that was just happening quite regular. But when was the last time you saw a really interesting story about a desktop environment? Been a while.
I don't know.
Just refining what they have. You know, you got KDE Fusion, you got GNOME, the old what they call the Ubuntu desktop before they switched back to GNOME. Whatever that desktop was, I can't remember what it was. Of course, you've always had the lightweight ones like XFCE and LXDE and stuff like that.
I mean, I use desktop environments once a week. I mean,
right?
You know, Wednesday nights in here.
Well, you're a strange animal, like to do shit in the terminal like all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I
like to do stuff in the terminal.
I still think that. I mean, all I've used. Outside when I was working, you know, when I had a job, I had to use Windows at work. But all I've used since 2004, no, 94, 95 is Linux. And that's all I've ever needed. And it does anything I want it to do.
Yep.
I can't think of anything.
It's all your use case.
Yeah.
It's all your use case. I mean, if you wanted to do certain things, that, like, for example, stuff like I do, you know, you probably could get away with it, but it depends on what you need to do.
It's not just use case, though, Joel. I mean, it's what I'm willing to do. In other words, if I had a use case that required me spending money to do it, I'm not going to do it that way when it comes to computer stuff.
Understandable, yeah.
I think the last piece of software, and I'm not talking about subscriptions, you know, service, software as a service. I'm not talking about, what's it called? I talked about it a couple of weeks ago, the where you pay $9 and you can play games on
streaming stit.
Yeah. I'm not talking about streaming or anything like that, but I think I paid $20 for Money Dance years ago, a Java based personal finance software.
Right.
And that was the last time I paid for any software, and that was years and years and years ago.
Right.
I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I don't mind doing it.
I mean, I'll find a way to do what I need without spending money.
Right. Right. And if I can do that, I do. You know, it just depends on
I'll spend
on
money
what
on
it's
hardware.
Going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, probably one of my most frustrating thing, and this is also happening on my work machine too, because the one thing that I've been spoiled by And it's free. Well, it's not free as an open source software. It's free software. But the editor I used to use constantly on Windows was Notepad++. All right. I have yet to find an equivalent to Notepad++ on the Mac. That I found stuff that lets me do some of what I can do, but not all of what I can do. Like, for example, Notepad++, I can create a regex and search across multiple files. I know you can do that at the command line too. So, I mean, that's neither here nor there, you know, but most of my work is on a desktop. So then, or on a Windows machine. So, I usually just fire up if it's a RDP session, I can fire up Notepad++. We do have it on all of our server instances anyway, because it's very useful, when looking at the logs. So, they tried doing things like, Datadog can ingest logs for applications, both ones that follow, you know, syslog format, as well as ones that like our applications that produce logs. Do it can consume those, but it only will consume. It makes them available for a certain time, and then Datadog will get rid of it. Then at that point, you're kind of stuck. At least if you had access to the server, and we do, at least in the managed cloud stuff. SaaS, we do not. But just being able to look through those logs in Datadog is a gigantic pain in the butt. Because mostly because of how our application spits its logs out. It's not like a lot of Linux logs will spit, you know, it'll be like one or two lines, but when we're looking for things in our logs, we're looking for strictly for certain patterns, and it's a very visual pattern, and it's very hard to code that into something that would help you filter it, like via a regex or something like that, because it's we're not talking just one line that's we're looking for. We're talking multiple lines for a pattern. Like, for example, we're probably going to be looking at some LDAP synchronization issues for a client. They're trying to create a user, but it's telling them things like, hey, it's already in AD, but you look in AD and that user's not there. And I'm trying to figure out why they're getting that message. So, and there were, the transaction, in our case, will show up in the logs with multiple lines, and the lines can be different, and sometimes it can be a little bit different formatting wise. So it's a pain in the butt to do it with some sort of automated tool. So best you can do is look at them in Notepad++, and you could search for some pieces of the pattern. So,
look, going back to what you were saying about the Linux desktop, elaborate. What do you mean? And are you comparing it to Windows and Mac desktops, and
yeah, I mean there are things that are happening in the Windows land, in the Windows and Mac world, that don't seem to be happening in open source that I know of, and I haven't searched it. Like for
give
example,
me examples, yeah.
All right, like for example, not that I care about it, okay, but like Microsoft's adding the Copilot tools to Windows, okay. I have not seen anything that adds like the AI tools necessarily directly to the desktop that's as easily and accessible. You know, there are AI tools in open source, no question, you know, but you probably have to know the command line. You know, granted, I haven't actually explored that, so maybe that's something I need to explore more.
Having said that, I mean, number one,
same thing with the Mac. I mean, they're adding AI tools to it as well.
To me, that's not an enhancement. That's a negative.
I don't necessarily disagree. Yeah. You know, they're forcing that on you. Like, for example, just this last week, I don't know if it's happened yet, but Microsoft's going to be taking away the ability to use a local account on Windows. You have to have a Microsoft account.
Yeah,
for a Windows machine, you know, and that's just dumb, you know. I do because, you know, my wife wants Microsoft 365, She gets whatever she wants, she gets. I'm not going to fight it. You know, but so I have an account. So that doesn't really directly impact me, but there are people that don't want to have a cloud account. And I get it. I totally get that. At least Mac doesn't do that yet. Although you do have iCloud, but you don't necessarily have to be logged into iCloud all the time.
I just can't see anything that Windows or Mac are doing on the desktop that beats Linux.
Like I said, it's all in how you use your computer, and how you use the computer is different than how a lot of people do.
I know, and I've got a very limited experience with AI, but just a month ago, I tried that DeepSeek R1, and I used a tool called Oomla, O-L-L, I guess, yep. Olama. And I was able to install, now I couldn't use it because I was hardware constrained, but I was able to install multiple large language models to play with on Linux from the command line. And they worked, but they were just super slow because I was hardware limited.
Right.
That took me 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing, though. It's like any of the cloud-based, or the ones that utilize clouds, like tools like ChatGPT, which Copilot essentially uses that in the background, all right? And same thing with Apple Intelligence things, what limited stuff they've released, which ain't much.
Well, I mentioned, let me see if I can find it, 6 or 7 months ago, or maybe not that long, I mentioned Lindows in its new iteration. I think it's Lindows. There's a Linux distribution. Yeah, it's
right.
I can't pronounce it. MaculuLinux.com. Lindows. They've got AI chat advisor built into it.
Interesting.
And for instance.
Now, granted,
it worked. And if you wanted to know how to do something,
right.
How to do something with Apache, if you want to know how to set up a reverse proxy in Apache in this distribution, I tried it out. You just type in, how do I do this? And it tells you. So, I mean, how's that any different? How's that any different than what Microsoft's doing? I mean, somebody's doing it.
Yeah, there's some that are doing it, right. But all I'm saying is it's not as accessible. I mean, you have to install those tools. It's not directly – when you install Ubuntu, does it have that active right from the get-go? It doesn't.
No, but Lindows does.
Right.
There's a distribution that's doing it.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So, I mean – personally, I don't care. I don't give a shit.
I
don't want it either. Yeah, I don't necessarily want Copilot. I got it, but I don't necessarily want it. Same thing. Now, I will say this: Gemini is pretty fantastic. I made a T-shirt. One of my favorite sayings, both when I'm doing physical like exercise work, as well as when I go out for a hike. Is a term called embrace the suck. So, if you basically you just got to push through what it is. But I made a T-shirt, and I said, I told Gemini, I said, make me a logo with black and white text that's hiking themed with the words embrace the suck on it, and it gave me a great image.
Yeah, I played with Google's got a tool in beta. I played with it that you can describe all kind of stuff.
Yep.
And
Gemini 2.0 is it's on my phone. And 2.5, I don't know when this should be rolling out soon. But it came out nice. I went ahead and dragged that into Cricut. It's also another thing I can't run on Linux is my Cricut, unfortunately.
You and my mom are the only people I know that do anything with Cricut. Well, that's not true. I know
some
teachers that do it, but
I guarantee you, ask around at your church. There's probably at least five different women that do it.
Oh yeah, I know that. I'm talking about the ones I know, but yeah, the ones I know are women. But I'm not saying it's a woman thing, but that's predominantly who uses
it's not.
It, but,
I mean, it's huge in the scrapbooking circles.
Yeah, and that's what my mom does is the scrapbooking stuff.
There's the logo I made, and I put that on a T-shirt, and it came out nice. I got a lot of good comments on it. I can't claim any artistic ability to create that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was real pleased with it. So, and I can get close to that. Some of the ones, they had some that would have looked good, but it would have been better if it was like a screen print or something like that, because they did that, like, you ever seen that where they like fade out the middle of the text or something like that? That's yeah. kind of rough to do on a Cricut.
Yeah.
So, like,
it's crazy, you know. And eventually, you know, AI, you can tie that to Cricut, and you yep. can image generating, you know,
yep.
on the fly kind of thing. I mean, movies, it's crazy what can be done.
Oh
now.
Yeah, I know. There's lots of stuff you can do there. Like, don't get me wrong, there's lots of stuff you can do with the open source tools, but it's not just like doesn't seem to be, like, there's one distro that does it so far, you know, but none of the majors yet. So, I mean,
I'm talking,
and I don't care AI's, about that. You know, I mean, AI's,
to me, it's a separate category.
But it's a fucking flash in the pan, is what it is.
You know, I don't
know. I
wish it was, but I don't think it's going to be.
right. Yeah, I mean, I personally think it still will be, but, you know, it's.
I think it's going to be a major paradigm shift, and that's why the writers went on strike. You're going to see, you know, a guy from Microsoft said yesterday, 95% of all code in 10 years is going to be written by AI.
I disagree with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was what the headline said. If you read down further down, he said it's not going to replace software engineers. You know, blah blah blah. It's just, but you hear stuff like Apple. I read another headline. Apple's coming out with this. They're revamping their health app, and it's they're using AI to, you know, to try to replace a doctor kind of thing.
Right, and part of the issues that they're running into is privacy issues. Like, for example, the Apple intelligence tools, like if you ever seen one, I'll have to find an ad and show that to you for some of the tools, but basically they will directly go in and read your email and then give you like a summary or extrapolate on that.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you want to give Apple control of that?
Yeah, I mean, that. I think that's built into Gmail now. I think you can have it summarize the email for you.
Yep. It's also built into ServiceNow as well. We got the ability. Actually, one real nice tool that we have, and I've never been able to just directly use it, as in press a button, it plops it in there, and it's good enough for me to hit send, you know?
Yeah.
There's
use cases. I was on X the other day, and when the JFK files came out, and somebody had used Grok,
right,
which is the AI tool for X, and they use it to summarize like 11 or 12 different documents, and it saved you a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah, it can. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just kind of, you know, is learning the prompts and stuff is going to be the difficult thing. And I was in an AI group, but it wasn't really teaching me. Like, I want to know, okay, now how do I set an AI up at home? You know, how could I install tools to do that, you know, outside of other tools? You know, and it wasn't there. They were talking about a whole bunch of basically jockey the prompts, you know, to get what you want. It's like, well, I don't need that. I don't need a training session on that.
Yeah.
I can figure that out on my own.
But that Ollama tool, you know, that made it, you could, there's probably 20 different large language models you can install.
Right.
Just using that. It's.
And there's also, at least with the other tools that are out there, there's also some significant environment things too, because the amount of CPU power required for AI is tremendous.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, it's those servers ain't cheap. So, but
I think this is it's going to change everything. I'm afraid. I mean,
now the one thing I'm not sure that's going to even happen anymore now though is they were. I don't know if you knew, but there's the CHIPS Act. The whole CHIPS Act is actually centered here, right here in Central Ohio, building the Intel Ohio 1 plant. And they're way behind. They were supposed to be producing chips already.
Yeah.
They don't even know if they're – well, because Intel's not doing so great. They don't even know if Intel's going to be able to produce chips in that plant right now at this point.
Wow.
And that's because Intel's just not doing good. Why do you think Microsoft's looking at Snapdragon laptops and stuff? And of course, Apple Silicon has replaced the Intel chip and the Apple hardware.
Yep.
There might be a world without x86, and it might even happen in our lifetimes, eh?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure things are going to change.
Yep. I mean, every ARM, I say, I'm now probably 90% on ARM chips daily and 10% on Intel. So that's not counting the servers I operate. I'm just talking about just the machines I'm on all the time.
But how do you play your games under Wine on ARM?
Well, funny that you say that. Okay, so that's why I'll still have a Windows machine, because I do have a lot of games I bought on Google Games. But there is a Mac client of GOG Galaxy. And I was able to play both the original Wing Commander and the Wing Commander 2 games on my Mac. Anything beyond that, no. So it wouldn't even let me install them. So even though I'm pretty sure that
on your ARM-based 3, Mac?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. And it played pretty well, too. As far as I could tell, I don't think they ran too fast. Because that's some of the problems you have with the older games, is whether they run too fast on modern hardware. Because they're essentially running in a DOS box, you know.
Uh-huh.
It makes me wonder. I have to go back and look at the history on those two games and see if they actually came out on the Mac. Some of the games around that era did. So. But I'm trying to think what else is in my library on good old games. Good old games where I had the majority of Roller Coaster Tycoon I could not play. Because I think I have the whole Roller Coaster Tycoon series, include 1 through 3, I think. But that's okay. My Windows laptop, my older Windows laptop, it's not so bad. It's currently my backup, so I probably won't put Linux on it, but I may start experimenting with putting Linux on my Surface Pro 6. I would just have to find a distro that will let me use the pen and stuff like that before I would completely commit to it. I'm sure there is one. I just haven't looked and found it yet. So, but we shall see. But I've got pretty much every major operating system in this room, so Linux included.
Did you see Rockbox came out with version 4, Dan?
No.
Whoa, yeah. I haven't looked at Rockbox in a long time.
The version 4 came out this week.
Are you using it?
No, I don't have a device.
Neither do I.
Well, I don't see what the hell does it run on anymore. It's just the iPod, right?
No, they've added support for a bunch of Chinese devices. They've removed support for some devices. I mean, there's still a lot of devices that it runs on.
But it's funny. I saw an ad for an MP3 player. It's on Amazon. That runs Android 13. It has a Snapdragon 665 chip in it. The Hi-Bee Digital M300 Android MP3 player with Bluetooth, Wi-Fi. When the hell did Amazon product listings become like Wish? God. Wi-Fi streaming player, Android 13, Snapdragon 665, Hi-Fi audio, PCM DSD, FM radio speaker. That's interesting. Touchscreen, 32 gigabyte plus 2 terabyte expandable storage.
Yeah, this sounds awful. that thing's not going to be supported.
Yes.
It's not going to be supported for any length of time. And Rock, it's something you put Rockbox on.
True. I don't know if you'd want to put Rockbox on this.
Well, I don't think you could on an Android device. They Rockbox, I think, did have a ill-fated Android release at one time. But
yeah, there it is. It's funky. It looks nice.
I know a lot of people don't use media players anymore because of streaming, but I still use Dead Beef every day because of this silly Icecast stream I have that plays almost 400,000 mod files. And I'm seriously been impressed with Dead Beef because I've got like six or seven different kind of mod files. I've got MP3s. I've got OGGs. This is just giant list of files that continuously plays on shuffle. And Rockbox is using less than 2 gig of RAM, and it never barfs. Dead Beef just came out release 1.1, so there's been a development since 2009 and still make a good product for anybody that needs a media player.
What happened?
I don't know.
You killed it, Dave.
I'm sorry.
It's a rock box.
I can do that.
Yeah. I forget what device I had Rockbox on. I think I had it on an old iPad. iPod at one point.
I had it on an iPod that had the internal replaceable hard drive. I had it on several Sansa E200s. I had it on the Sansa Clip. I had it on everything. All the devices I had, I put Rockbox on.
How long ago was the last time you used Rockbox?
Oh god, it was 2007 or 2008 maybe.
Oh my goodness! Okay, yeah. So forget it. Because I know that.
It's been at least
so
that long.
What was the Sansa's. Was there a Zip or something? I know there was a Clip.
Yeah.
The first Sansa device that came out, first or second, they were great. But then I can't remember what it was, like the third generation or something like that, the Zip, I believe it was. They changed some kind of whatever the processor or whatever it was in there. And then it was they were limiting you to only being able to have a 2,000 song catalog.
Yeah, and I think Rockbox got around that.
And then also you couldn't mix between the SD card and the the device, but I thought like the first couple of versions.
Yeah, finally.
First couple of versions, they were able to do that because I remember I had those and I could have songs on the SD card.
On Rockbox, yeah.
No, not on Rockbox. I'm just talking about the Sansa devices, and then the chipset changed, and you couldn't like split your library between the device and the SD card, the internal storage and the SD card. And then it was like both were limited to 2,000. So if you had like 5,000 songs on the SD card, you could play them if you played it by file, but it could only index 2,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Was Rockbox able to get beyond that?
I think so. I think that was
it
one of the reasons.
It should have, because you could load it on a 60 gig iPod. I mean,
right, but I didn't know. Maybe I should have done that on some of my other devices at the time.
What's funny is the Chinese brands are the only ones you can find anymore of any MP3 player.
Yeah, if I looked at a supported list on the Rockbox site of the hardware they added, they were all obviously Chinese with weird names like the Dooge.
The dude.
I searched for Sansa, and a whole bunch of ones by Hibi or Hibi came up. Some of those are Android based, like the one I just talked about. There's another one. I don't know what this is based on, but it looks like probably Android as well, because it has like Tidal on it as well.
Yeah, this release removes support for some Arcos devices. Remember those?
Oh, God, yeah. I always wanted one, never got one.
They were expensive.
Yes, they were. I did like one of my favorite MP3 players of all time was when Best Buy's Insignia brand brought out the Pilot. And that was a great machine, great one, but I ended up cracking the screen on it. But that even had Bluetooth in it, and it was very nice. And you could put a micro SD card in it too. But in ways I miss that, in some ways I don't, because I literally can fire up my phone and listen to any damn song I want to listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean,
like I said, media players have, even portable ones have limited use cases now.
Unless you want a really nice one that supports things like lossless codecs and stuff like that, then you got ones like the Hibi R4, which runs Android 12. Why does it run Android 12? That's friggin' old, man.
Because it's cheap.
Yeah, well, it's only $249, so, I mean, I spent more on MP3 players in the past.
I thought it was cheap for the manufacturer to use that.
But it has looks like a huge battery. Wait, where did I was just talking about.
Where did you post it?
Mumble chat. I mean, that thing looks like a beefy boy.
You know what it is? Wait, what? Oh my God, $249.
Yeah, I know, right?
What's the dimension?
4,500 milliamp hour battery, 4.7 inch. Let me see if it can tell me how thick it is.
Does it play OGG? I remember that.
It probably does. It's Android. It'll play OGG, yeah.
That was a big thing, like, back in the day.
It was a big thing.
Oh, it doesn't play OGG. Wait.
I'm not
kidding. It runs Android. It'll play OGG. Just load the fucking app on it.
Support standards MP4, AAC, and MP3.
It probably supports more than that. It's an Android device.
That's what it says right here. Why would they lie to you? Wait, let's find out.
Because the damn thing will run Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, and Tidal. All right, so it'll run you. If you can install another app, it'll run it. I'll be right back.
Oh, so because Joel says you might be able to install apps, it can run OGG, but there's explicitly says it only supports those three. So I wouldn't. It's too big. What were you gonna say?
I was gonna change subjects, but
go ahead, change the subject.
It'll be a very short divergence. But when's the last time? When was the last time you ever scanned anything with Linux? Used a scanner.
Oh, you know, I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, man, it's been a long time since I've used a scanner. Oh, my goodness.
To cut to the chase, I had this. We're getting our pool liner replaced, and we're converting from chlorine to salt water.
So you scanned your pool liner?
No. The guy that's doing it sent me a contract and required a signature. And since I retired, I've not had the need. I thought I had saved a copy from my work files of my signature. Because, I mean, I was just going to, like, hit the PDF and edit it and slap in my signature. And but I didn't have my wife's either, so I needed to scan her signatures because I didn't want to mail this. It was quicker to email it back to him. So I needed to figure out how to scan. And it was like, you know, back when I was scanning from home is back during COVID, and I had a Windows laptop for work, and it was you know, you had a graphical interface, you downloaded HP Smart software, and it just worked. This was like going back in time, but it took me like, you know, 5 minutes to figure it out. But I think it's one command from the command line, scan image, I think's what it was, and it just worked. I mean, there was one command to list the devices, the same devices. It listed it, and I told it which device to use, and just scan image out. .tiff or out.png or whatever you want, you know, whatever format you want. It just worked. It was cool.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm trying to remember. I don't think it was that long ago. If I recall correctly, like, my mother-in-law gave us this, like, all-in-one multifunction printer, scanner, copier thing.
Yeah.
And yep. I think I used that to scan something in, and this is going back, like, 3 or 4 years ago, I think. Maybe it was a little longer than that, but It was within the past 5 years, I believe, I used the scanner. Now where the scanner stuff, I have no idea where my scanner is now. I don't even have a scanner.
Yeah, I mean, I got a HP.
I do.
Office Jet 32 something. I got it for $15 at a Goodwill store. It's got a scanner. And like I said, I just did the command line scan image and gave it the file and, you know, which device it was in the file, and it just worked. But it reminded me of the first time I scanned using Linux, and it was command line. But I'm sure there was a GUI someplace installed, but I just used the command line, and it just worked.
That's one thing in recent years that I haven't had to struggle with on Linux is getting a fucking printer to work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just everything I bought, it just worked. You know, I have a HP 410. Or no, I'm sorry, 4100 in the office here. It works just fine for Linux. I didn't even have to install it. Linux just identifies it and finds it, puts it on as a printer. I didn't have to install a driver, no nothing. It just worked. The Mac is the same way. I didn't have to do anything. That's because the Mac uses cups in the background. Ba-doom, boom.
And I just thought it was neat that I could do it from the command line. I mean, it was just...
I can't think of a time I would want to scan a document from the command line, because I usually want to scan only parts of it.
Well, I mean, I got a piece of printer paper and a Sharpie. I wrote my signature on it, and my wife wrote hers. I scanned it, then I used GIMP to cut it out. And
cut it out, yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, the whole thing took me 5 minutes.
Yep. I usually like to do a direct scan, too. Of what I want, but that's okay. You know, or I do a preview scan, like, and you can do that in GIMP. That's no problem. And GIMP's good, but it's you know, it's not. You know, it just depends on what you want to do. It's a very manual editor versus some of the newer, you know, some of the features they've added to Photoshop and stuff over the years. I remember, well, now it's like, do you even hear about, like, back in the day, that there was always a big deal to buy plugins for Photoshop? You don't hardly even hear about that anymore.
What, plugins for Photoshop?
Yeah. I'm sure they exist, but...
Now, what do you know about the Garmin subscription fiasco that happened this week, Joel? Anything?
Well, yeah, I know they're adding a plus version to Garmin Connect. I have tried figuring out if I even want to subscribe to it. How do I do it? And there's no option in there.
Or are they just selling different metrics? I mean, are they putting those behind paywalls? I mean, what's the purpose other than Garmin making money?
Well, Garmin's going to make money anyway. Because that's another thing I might be buying. I might be picking up a Garmin InReach. But let's see here. But I got a reason. See, I think eventually one of these days they're probably going to build InReach into the watches.
Yeah, eventually.
I search Garmin Connect Plus. I need to search that.
Oh, fellas, I gotta drop off early. It's time to get my wife her
pants. Oh my goodness, it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, we gotta wrap this up.
That's not early. That's on time. But
yeah, take care of your wife, man.
Now, just to address that, from what I have read, I'll bring more next week.
Okay.
From what I have read about it, the base functionality is still there in the free version. So, I need to find out more about that though.
Okay, I got to run upstairs. I'll talk to y'all next week.
All right, take it easy. Best to your wife.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Joel, we're going to wrap this up. We're going
to
play you out. Have a good week. Keep on get your miles in.
Go get my protes.
Yeah, go get your protein too, huh? All right, here your stuff.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Gun.
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
So thus far, all I can find is it looks like it's adding AI bullshit to it.
Oh, why not, huh? Everything's adding AI bullshit.
AI, even a fucking rice maker has AI. Which it actually doesn't, but. See, and that's the other thing is what's truly large language model AI and what's bullshit?
There you go. Alright, I gotta stop this so we can get this out.
Yeah, the biggest thing that most of the Garmin folks are complaining about is that these watches, any of the good, like higher end Garmin watches, like the one I have, they're above $1,000.
Damn. I said the big question on everybody's mind: how's your wife doing?
She's doing all right. Slow going.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're telling her she can do two things and just two things for the next 6 weeks. And that's lift
Yell
her
you.
Arm. Yeah, lift her arm, you know, like she's doing a dumbbell curl, but without, you know, using her right hand to lift it. She's not supposed to use her bicep at all. So she's got to lift her arm 90 degrees with her other arm. And then she has to do, I guess, passive arm swing. Not sway. What do you call pendulum swings? You know, bend over 90 degrees and just let her arm dangle. That's all she can do for 6 weeks. They're treating it like a traumatic injury / car wreck break kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bone was damaged to the point that they're gonna have to go really slow with her recovery. But it was a total reverse shoulder replacement. I think that means the socket. The shoulder socket where the arm bone goes into it is it's hard to describe. It's a cup, but it's like reversed. It's weird looking, but I think she's gonna have to rely on the deltoid muscle to do most of the work eventually. But right now, for 6 weeks, she can't do anything. So it's, and every 3 hours, she's on pain medicine. I'm having to wake her up and give it to her. And she's beginning to sleep. You know, the pain's gotten better. So it's a big mess. But the surgery went well.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And every episode, it's going to be a better
better recovery process, right? And excellent. So I'm glad. I hope that it continues to go get less and less painful.
Yeah, I think her average pain level today was the first day is below a 5. Average. She's probably averaged about a 4 today, which is tolerable.
Now, when it's all said and done, is she going to have a bionic arm?
No, she's going to have an expensive arm with a lot of metal in it, but I don't think it's bionic. I would probably a good thing. But she's doing good.
So, yeah, is she bedridden? Or?
Yeah, she's upstairs in a recliner, and I'm doing everything for her.
She must get really bored, though.
Oh yeah.
That's
and that's depressing for her because she's a doer. She likes to get up and be doing something all the time. But she's doing good, and I say I'm doing everything for her. That's not exactly true. She's left-handed, and this is her right arm, so she can do a lot. But she gets pretty weak doing it. Like we went for a post-op visit in Greenville, and then she wanted to eat, so we stopped at his seafood place and went inside and ate. Then she wanted to go see her mom, and that was just too much for her. I just about had to carry her in the house. She was that weak, but she
just left her in the car. You said you brought this on yourself.
Yeah, I'm not strong enough to pick you up. You just have to stay out here. But yeah, I've got some video games
to play. See you later.
I got a camera in the front window, and there's a video of us walking from my truck inside with her, and she's just shaking, and I'm holding her up. And of course, I got a white beard. We look like we're in our 80s. I told her, I said, she's not seeing it yet. I said, this is our future. It's what we're going to look like in 4 years. So we look like that way now.
Now, how long you guys been married now?
Oh, what is it? 2025? I'd say 91, so been 30 years in 2021, so 34 years.
91, you got married, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we started dating in 88. That's a...
When you were 13.
She was 18.
She was 8?
She was 18 in 88.
You were 32. She was 8 years old.
Oh, I was almost 21.
Nothing wrong.
No, I was almost 22. Yeah. I was 21.
Oh, that's great, man. Congratulations.
Yeah, I think I'll keep her.
And then when she gets to recovery, she's going to whip your ass, right?
Well, she's been bragging on me. She's been telling everybody I'm helping a lot, and I told her I'm keeping score. So.
What are you working on over there?
Who, me?
Yeah.
That was a mouse wheel. Sorry, I didn't know you could hear that.
Oh, a mouse wheel. Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you cracked open something to drink and then started playing with a ratchet.
This is the noise.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You can hear that. That's good.
Mouse wheel. Jeez, mouse? Oh, my goodness. Were you using a desktop over there?
No, I'm in a terminal window with Vim open. I don't know. I was thinking I was just bored. I think, well, I'll hit GG. Why am I hitting the mouse wheel?
Next thing you'll be like, yeah, my trackball's not working over here too well.
I've never owned a trackball.
Oh my goodness. Gosh, man, I remember when way back in the day, like the rollerball mice and then the optical mice came out and they were like 3 times as expensive as the rollerball mice, and then they made all the rollerball mice. Like, can you even get a rollerball mouse anymore? I don't think so. Can you?
I don't know. I have no idea. I tell you who wouldn't know. That's Joel. I remember him talking a couple of months ago about that mouse that's got a subscription and like a laptop.
Oh yeah.
If anybody would buy that, it'd be him.
And he make an excuse that he had to review it for Gear Diary.
Yeah.
And he's still paying on it. that is so, like, that is so, I don't know. There was this guy, I think, I'm pretty sure his name was Randy Kramer. really good guy. He was a really nice guy and always wanting to help out and pitch in. But he was part of the Lug when we first started it, and one of the things that he absolutely wanted to try and figure out was how he could. What are you playing?
That's my phone. It's just a notification. Wow. I silenced it.
It's your wife trying to get a hold of you.
No.
But he. So what he wanted to do was have a copy buffer that you could hotkey content in and out of.
Okay.
So, like, you could copy one thing and then copy a second thing and a third thing and a fourth thing or whatever. And then you could hotkey whatever you've copied back out again to wherever you wanted it.
Yeah, there's Rofi scripts like that now. I got what, one.
What kind of script?
Rofi. It's an app launcher, sort of like DWM. And it's just an app launcher, but you can script it, and you can put stuff in the clipboard, and then using Fuzzy Finder retrieve it.
Huh. I've seen people at work have something similar now. Like, this was, holy man, I don't, how long ago was that they came out with that?
Oh, it's probably 10 years. I mean, I'm guessing. I've been using something called a script called Rofi Clipboard for years.
All right.
Six or 10 years.
This had to be back in like 99 or 2000 that he was wanting to do this. And I don't know why. It just, when I think of old tech, like old things like that and mice and stuff, I always think of that, him and that desire. And I know, like, I don't know. I don't know if that would be useful to me.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know about
that. Is it useful to you?
Rarely. I think the only time I use it is I switch browsers from Firefox to Qt browser, and there's no extension. So using Bitwarden, sometimes copying and pasting passwords. I've had to rely on another script that does that. But sometimes if I'm generating a password and I want to put it into Bitwarden, it's helpful to copy it to the clipboard. And I'm juggling a URL that's been pasted and a password that's been pasted. And it every once in a while comes in handy.
Well, there you go. See, now I know. Like, sometimes at work, I would find it handy if I have to, kind of do something similar like that. Like, I got to do one thing in one place and do another thing in another place. And it's kind of like the same thing is going to need to be done in both places. Yeah. But
And copy and paste in Linux is still a little weird. I mean, there's like two or three different buffers. I mean, I know, like, to paste my web browser into Vim, they use Shift Insert. But if I use the middle click, it's like a different buffer or something. It's weird. And I at times have my head wrapped around. At times I forget, which one's going to do what. Because you can right click and hit paste. You can middle click or first and third mouse button same time paste, and then there's shift insert, and sometimes they paste different things.
What's shift insert? Is that
I don't know. It works in Vim.
What are the keystrokes for shift insert? I always use control shift V.
Shift insert paste in Vim for me.
Shift insert?
It's to hold down the shift and then press the insert button. It's above the delete button. That not answering your question?
It yes and no. I get what you're saying, but I don't have an insert key.
Really? Well, yeah, I guess you need a 108 key keyboard, probably. A full size keyboard would probably have an insert key.
Wait, where's the delete key? Oh, there it is. Yeah, okay, wait. Oh, that's interesting.
It's weird what shortcuts. You know, how do you close Vim?
Well, if I'm not saving, it's just Q, or if I am saving, it's. If I'm not saving, you could do. What's that?
It's
you know what?
QW.
I do it all the time, and now you call me on it. QW.
I close Vim if I want to save what I'm doing. And I've done this ever since I started using Vim. I've never used that QW one. It's Shift ZZ, and I don't know what. To me, that's easier because it's two buttons are right next to each other. But it does the same thing, Shift ZZ, and it's built in. I mean, I don't know why there's two ways to do it sometimes. But
does it save when you do Shift ZZ?
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't even know that. Interesting. You know what else is interesting is I have I have every button but insert. So, you know, like on the keyboard, it's got insert, delete, end, home, page up, and page down.
Yeah.
I have end, page down, page up, home, and delete, but I don't have insert on this keyboard.
That's weird.
It's on a laptop keyboard, so.
Yeah. It's a non-standard keyboard.
And then they have these, like, these functional keys that I have no idea what they do. Like there's a, it looks like a button to pick up a phone and a button to hang up a phone, and I'm like, that makes absolutely no sense to me. What happens if I press it?
Yeah.
If I press it, it brings up
boo,
a menu, not a boo. Menu, the whatever the hell that thing is, that and Manjaro for. Shit, I don't even know. What am I using? Is it XFCE? I think I'm using XFCE.
Manjaro? Oh, XFCE.
Yeah, I know, but I'm trying to remember which one I'm using.
Is it the settings menu it brings up?
I have KDE.
Well, it's got that little, I don't know, what do you call it? The Manjaro menu that you click, and it's like Terminal Emulator, File Manager, Web Browser, and
oh,
favorite.
The Start menu.
Yeah, so when I hit the pick up the phone, it does that. When I hit the close phone, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, and I don't have that. On this keyboard, I've the only weird key is a key that looks like a film strip and some music notes. So some kind of multimedia key. And I hit it, and I'm running Debian and KDE, and it pulled up the quick settings, system settings app.
You're not running the Awesome desktop?
Awesome? Like the no, I run i3 on my daily driver, but back here on, I got KDE on everything else. That I don't use often. The one I use daily is heavily modified. Everything's keyboard driven. The ones I use only seldom. I just put KDE on it.
You know what I don't understand?
Nice.
What I don't understand is
thermoses.
No, I get on. I understand thermoses. Is there is a
everything.
A number lock key, but it's comboed with F10, and I'm like, why would you ever use? I guess maybe people are really used to that, having that number pad on the side, and they would want to use a number lock key because then it has 789, where 789 are. 456 were you?
I've come to think I don't have a machine with a number pad anymore.
Yeah, I don't either. But this keyboard has mapped to like on letters and stuff. It's like a telephone, Dave.
Well, that's what it is on some laptops. Yeah,
all my keyboards are even my laptop. I which is closed. I use a 108 key standard keyboard with the number pad on the side.
Not on Model M.
Not on what?
A Model M.
What is that, a Mac?
No, IBM Model M keyboard.
Oh,
man, where the hell you been?
I wish I had one of those.
See, See,
I used to years ago, but I get.
That's the thing I don't get, man, is how much they want for some of these mechanical keyboards out there now. They're ridiculous.
But I've got a mechanical keyboard on my daily driver, and I love it. I mean, it's not an IBM Model M or anything, but it's red switches. It's pretty clicky-clacking. I like it a lot, but, you know, I can't even tell you who makes it, but it suits my needs just fine.
Well, I got a new keyboard. Actually got a whole new computer.
I guess we should start the show.
What? Got a MacBook Air.
What episode about a week
ago. Oh, you haven't started yet? Jeez.
No. I'm guessing it's 1093, but I wasn't here last week.
I wasn't here either. For me, just go, man.
We weren't waiting for you. We were talking.
We were just jawboning.
Yeah.
Okay.
93. What did you say it was, Dave?
I think it's 1093.
Good, good, good. Joel had pissed everybody off already. I love you, Joel.
Meh. Go get some protein.